Tax Committee to order. And today we're going to hear the department's technical bills, and or the technical bill and the policy bill. So, Ms. Von Mosch, if you can join us. We apologize. We know you're waiting. We just got off the House floor. So, and Ms. Von Mosch, we were hoping that we could kind of clip through your presentation and we'll hold questions. And we're also, if there's anyone who will want to testify on these, you know, we'll do that too. So, but we'll take questions when you're done. So which one would you like to do first, Ms. Von Mosch?
Madam Chair, I can start with whichever one you prefer, if you have a preference.
I don't. It's up
okay.
to you.
I'll start with the technical bill then, since that's the first one on the agenda.
Okay, and we can't move it because we don't have a quorum yet to the floor, but we'll move it when we have a quorum. So thank you. Please.
Great. Thank you. Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Susan Von Mosch with the Department of Revenue, and we are here today to talk about House File 489, which is the department's technical bill. And the technical and policy bills, they both come up through the agency with a process that starts in the midsummer with staff within the agency, within the divisions, and with our appeals and legal staff working together to identify provisions that they think need to be changed so that we can operate the revenue department and the tax system more efficiently and effectively. In keeping with that, we try to have these bills be as non-controversial as possible. And both of these bills, as you can see in your packets, or neither of these bills have any fiscal impact either, in keeping with the nature of them. With that, I will begin with House File 489, the technical bill, Article 1, the individual income and the corporate franchise tax section. Article. Sections 1 through 4 deal with the estimated tax payments for C corporations and exempt entities. This is a change, a technical change, that basically clarifies that the estimated tax payments that apply both to the C corporations and to the entities that pay unrelated business income. So the estimated tax payments apply to both. Sections 5 through 9 deal with possessions, tax credit clarifications, and these sections repeal obsolete references to the Internal Revenue Service Code. Sections 6, 7, 8, and 9 on extraterritorial income modifications repeal obsolete references also to federal code. Section 10 on unity of ownership clarifies that for combined reporting purposes that the unitary ownership does not exist when two or more corporations are involved unless there is directly or indirectly a common owner with more than 50%. And keeping with your desire, Madam Chair, I'll proceed all the way through this bill through each article, and then we can take questions at the end. Article 2 is the involves estate tax provisions. It establishes administrative requirements for the recapture tax by adding a filing requirement for the recapture tax that is required if there's a cessation of the trade or business or a disqualifying disposition of the property. There's also requires a filing that the qualified heirs file two information reports. It clarifies that the due date for the recapture tax is on or before 6 months after the cessation of the business or trade, and it adds the payment due dates. Article 3 is on property taxes. Sections 5, 6, 7, 8, and 12 basically clarify that the tax return information that is supplied to an assessor for making application for different types of property tax classification determinations, that information is going to remain and be treated as private data. as it would always be, but because so much of the data in the property tax system is public, this is a clarifying that income tax information will be private data. Sections 2 and 13 allow assessors to value land for tax exchange purposes, and in the cases of land exchange that the assessor does not need to have an appraisal license. Section 3 and 9 involves the usage tax, and it deals with tax-exempt property that becomes taxable when it's leased, loaned, or otherwise made available for a business for profit, and it clarifies that the federal government can be the owner of the exempt property. And Section 9 also specifically includes local government owners in this same type of provision. Section 4 removes obsolete language that is related to the market value provision that is repealed in Section 14, and that's a program that no longer exists. Section 10 changes the definition of rural area for the purposes of electric cooperatives, in that it changes it to a home rule, a statutory city, or a home rule charter city, and this replaces language that is no longer operative in statute. Section 11 involves notices of delinquent property, and it replaces language, existing obsolete language, with an instruction that the Commissioner of Revenue will provide a correct and complete narrative description of the various redemption periods related to the notices. Section 14 contains three repealers. The first one repeals obsolete language that requires lessors of personal property, such as tools or machinery, to submit a list of those items each year to the commissioner. We just don't do that anymore. It also repeals obsolete language related to the market value provision, which expired in 2010, and it repeals language related to the hazardous lead paint provisions that are no longer effective as of pay 2013. Article 4 deals with special taxes and sales and use taxes, and the first one is the mortgage and deed section number 1. It provides a definition of the word partition, and it basically says that the exemption for filing a deed partition applies only to the deed or the partition that divides a contiguous parcel if it's co-owned by individuals. Sections 2 and 5 deal with the obsolete language that dealt with accelerated vendor remittances. It was implemented in 2010 and tied to certain conditions that were met in the February 2012 forecast for the amount of money that is going into the reserve accounts. And so with that condition being met in February of 2012, this language becomes obsolete. And I believe there are several bills introduced that also carry this provision. Section 3 is a clarification of the brewer credit that changes a reference from a calendar year to a fiscal year. Section 4 deals with insurance tax retaliatory provisions, and it strikes an obsolete reference and corrects the list of sections that are covered by the retaliatory tax provisions to include life insurance companies. Article 5 is minerals. Section 1 deletes an exemption, a reference to the direct, reduced, or subject as it relates to the net proceeds tax, because this type of ore is not subject to the net proceeds tax. Section 2 adds a definition for hydrometallurgical processes, which was missing. And Section 3 deals with the net proceeds tax, and it makes a technical change to conform the distribution language to the language that's in another section that imposes the tax. Article 6 involves void miscellaneous, and it the first section is on void warrants, and it clarifies that the holder of a void warrant cannot recover against the state. Sections 2 through 12 involve uniform interest penalties, and what we're doing in this section is we're providing a single uniform statement of the rule regarding when interest penalties accrue, and that they accrue when the penalty is assessable. Right now in statute we have different penalties, and they have a range of dates for when they when they are imposed and when the interest starts and when they are due, and so this makes it all clarifies that the penalties are they start accruing from the date that interest is assessable. That is the technical bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Von Mosch. And Representative Hansen, can you move the House File 49 for us for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hansen. So the bill's before us. And if we could just pause for 1 second. We're going to get to the other one, too. But first, I want to ask if there's any public testimony for or against the bill that's before us, because we do want to take that. Okay. Generally, in what we've done on these bills since I've been here is both of them, we kind of hear them, we lay them over, and members who have issues should start working with the Department of Revenue, because these are really, they tend to be pretty broadly technical, pretty nonpartisan provisions, but we've held them out. If either side of the aisle here has a big problem with something, we usually hold them out, and they don't go into the omnibus tax bill unless we can reach resolution. And you know, there's usually maybe one provision a year, if that. So that would be my intention, too, that any members would start working with your department if they have a problem with a provision. So if I may, and I don't want to embarrass anyone here, but I think it would be helpful for the committee to hear the folks you've brought with you, Assistant Commissioner Von Mosch, if they could just introduce themselves to the committee, because not everybody, we have some new members, and not everybody knows all of you, and these are really the public servants who do so much for the state of Minnesota and for our tax system. Thank you so much. You know, did we miss anyone? Please, yes. Welcome, welcome. Yes, didn't see you back there. Okay, and members and for our constituents, I mean, these people really, they are the people who make the legislature look good by trying to figure out what we meant when we when we passed a law. So we're really glad you're here, and we know these provisions are very detailed, and we thank you very much for working on them for all of us. So questions from the committee on any part of this or concerns you'd like held out for a later time? Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just two quick questions. First of all, to Mr. Michael, someone out there introduced themselves as they kind of head up special taxes. What's a special tax?
It's actually,
I mean, they're all special, but
super special, yeah.
Are some more special than others?
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, as former Chair Abrams always said, all taxes are special, but that generally refers to things like the alcoholic beverage excise tax, the cigarette tax, the petroleum tax, etc. The sort of the more minor excise tax, the solid waste taxation, and so forth.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Might be like a catch-all.
Okay, and then to Ms. Von Mosch, question, you were going through the estate, some estate tax issues here. I'm getting a lot of complaints, and maybe this will go for offline, but I'm getting a lot of complaints We put the provisions in there to conform with the feds on the estate tax for farmers and small businesses, and there was some provisions put in there that need to stay in the family, be rented out the same way, or farm the same way, those types of things. I'm getting a lot of calls from actual law firms saying that the department being extremely uncooperative on the estate tax issue. Do we need some clarifying language so that family farms and small businesses are able to exercise what's in the law? It seems there's a lot of pushback from the department denying a lot of people's requests to be able to participate in the law in that area.
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, I'm actually very surprised to hear that, because we have a fair amount of information out there on our website that explains how the estate tax is being administered, what the different definitions are. I guess I'd be curious in hearing from you, and maybe we can talk about this in a separate conversation, about what some of the specific complaints are. We also have people that do provide assistance through the telephone when people call in, but I'm under the impression that when the estate tax was passed, and then after session last year, after May of last year, we put a fair amount of effort into making sure that we had FAQs out on our website and that we had the information out there and that we were training our staff on how to respond to questions on those provisions. So I'd like to talk with you more in more detail about
Representative Davis,
the concerns that
and thank
are
you,
having.
Madam Chair, and I guess it is relevant to this bill because it does have to do with the estate tax, and I realize this is the non-controversial bill that everybody should be supporting. But I would like to take you up on that, and the person that I'd like to meet the special tax person sometime, but the estate tax person, because I think Farm Bureau and Farmers Union are currently working on a bill to correct some of the further clarify some of the situations, because a lot of farmers are being denied the use of this, and it's very problematic, and the Farm Bureau and Farmers Union will be coming forth with the bill to try and clarify some of these issues, because apparently it is a bit cloudy. But that being said, I'm going a bit deeper into what these bills do. So, Madam Chair, I think you've got a couple of great bills here. And so maybe if you could have my people talk to your people, and we can get together and,
yes,
and try and work that out, because there's some real concern, and especially in the farming community, that in fact, I've had law firms in my district calling me saying, what is that department doing there? They don't have any clue what they're doing, and people are being denied being able to use the estate tax provisions. So, Madam Chair, if they could have their people call my people, we'll get together.
Yes, please. And
Madam Chair, Representative,
yes,
Davis, I believe that we do have a meeting scheduled on Friday with the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union representatives. So that is in the works as we speak, and hopefully we'll be able to listen to their concerns and provide some alleviation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Vonmash, just do what they say and we'll be fine.
Okay. Thank you. Did you want to add? Please. No, you don't. Okay. We love that. Thank you so much. Okay, so other items to raise in this House file? If not, again, last call for public testimony. Otherwise, we're going to lay it over. Representative Drazkowski, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on page 20, Article 3, Section 2, the addition of land exchanges. If Ms. Vonmash, if you could just quickly describe that. Does that include the 1031 federal exchange, or is this just exchanging a parcel for a parcel? And then I guess that's kind of my question.
Assistant Commissioner, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Sturica to assist me with this question.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, Representative. I'll try to get to the point here. I see where you're looking on page 20 there. It's the phrase land exchanges is hanging out there with no modifiers or anything like that. But the connection is, if you go back to page 35, section 13. So back, apologize for jumping.
Wait a minute.
Here. In section 2, we're talking about prohibited activity for necessity. And what normally we want to restrict the assessor to doing valuing property for tax purposes. Valuing property turns out to be a handy thing to be able to do for all number of purposes. Right now, we've let the county and the local units use the assessor for condemnations, right-of-ways, and special assessments, in addition to the tax. This adds land exchange, but it's not private party land exchanges, it's county government land exchanges, which are talked about back on Section 13. A couple years ago, I think it was 2011, counties were given the authority to exchange property. Before that, they had to buy or sell.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, members, if you have issues, it's been our tradition to pull these out and work on them together bipartisanly to get them agreed on with the department, or maybe we just in the legislature don't agree and we end up not doing them, but these are what they're bringing forward for us for now. So I'm going to lay this over, unless there's something else, for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And thank you. And Representative Lilly is moving House File 490 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Okay?
Yep.
Thank you. Assistant Commissioner, please.
Madam Chair, House File 490, the Department Policy Bill, begins with Article 1, Income and Franchise Tax, and the first section deals with reporting requirements for regulated insurance companies that pay municipal bond interest, and it removes the requirement for that reporting It removes the fact that it's only required if the regulated insurance company must register under Chapter 80A, because we no longer require companies to register under that provision. Section 2 deals with withholding payments on out-of-state contractors, and it requires state and local units of government and other people who contract with non-Minnesota construction contractors to withhold 8% of the payments due under the contract if the value of the contract exceeds $50,000. This is a wording change in that currently we require a cumulative annual payments of $50,000, and the change is a little clearer and it will make it easier to track. And this is, just for clarification, this is a request we received from the Department of Administration to make this change, because they're the ones that really track this type of activity for the state. Article 2 is property taxes, and sections 1 and 7 related to 4BB residential classifications. We're recommending that 4BB1 and 4BB2 be combined, mainly because there are very few parcels in these classifications, and we don't see the need anymore to have a distinction between the agricultural and non-agricultural categories. Section 2 relates to air flight property tax collection. We are requesting legislation that clarifies that the Commissioner of Revenue collects the air flight property tax. That is the way we currently operate, but is not clearly stated in statute. Section 3 also relates to air flight property and the commissioner's duties, in that the commissioner is allowed to abate both the air flight property tax late payment penalties and late filing penalties, but the statute on the late filing penalties is missing the right cross-reference, and so we're basically ensuring that both of those provisions are complete. Sections 4 and 6 deal with agricultural homesteads, and these get a little complex for me, so I'm going to go to the write-up that I have been provided with. Basically, Section 4 updates the definition for person, so it means both human beings and other entities like trusts, which a lot of agricultural property is now held in trust. And then Section 6 modifies the definition of 2A agricultural property to include three new pieces of language. We clearly state that our current interpretation that intensive livestock confinement operations are an agricultural use, even if they're occurring on properties of less than 10 acres. We are stating that land for land to remain in an agricultural classification after it's been enrolled in a government program for conservation easements, that it requires that that land be agricultural the year before it is entered into that enrollment. And we clarify that small acreage category includes parcels of 11 acres that have a house. Section 5 relates to the Rural Preserve Program, and it makes a provision that the Rural Preserve Program be operated the same way as Green Acres when it comes to transferability issues. If parcels are transferred within these programs, it can trigger a reapplication process and sometime a payment of foregone taxes. And so basically, we, for rural preserves, we are saying that transfers of property to a surviving owner due to a death, or transfer to a property to a spouse as a result of a divorce, and transfer to a property to a trust or an authorized farming partnership that has the same people in it that are the beneficiaries, that those types of transfers would not trigger a reapplication process. Section 8 extends the time period for utilities and railroads to appeal the operating property valuations. Currently, it is required that appeals be filed by May 15th or 10 days after the date of valuation. For railroads, the date would be the earlier of June 15th or 10 days after the date of valuation, and for utilities, it would be the earlier of July 1 or 10 days after the valuation. Section 9 is the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program, and we are eliminating the need for this program for lien notices to be notarized, and this basically allows greater consistency between how the department uses lien notices for other or it complies with what we require for notarized documentation for other types of lien notices within the department. Article 3 is miscellaneous. And the first provision provides that notice of determinations or actions can be sent by electronic means. And this is an opt-in program that's part of our new e-services program. And basically, it allows people to agree to receive an electronic notice. And for people who opt in, then that is how the department would communicate them with them. We do have procedures in place if an email is not opened within a certain number of days. And we have the ability to monitor that then we would also send a paper notice to their land, their post office address. Section 2 deals with the petroleum tax, one of those special taxes, Representative Davids, and E85. And it basically updates the definition that has been recently adopted by the Federal American Society for Testing and Materials, and it puts us in alignment with new federal definitions. Section 3 relates to the sales tax, and it provides language that's required by the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement, of which Minnesota is part of, that it's the taken in good faith language that explains that a seller takes the sales tax exemption certificate from a purchaser in good faith. And this provision also has a retroactive date of January 1, 2013, because that is the date when member states of the Streamlined Sales Tax Association are supposed to be in conformity with this provision. Section 4 involves tobacco products tax and the wholesale price. The tobacco products tax proposal, it updates the definition of the wholesale price, which is the base for the tobacco products tax. And it is a reaction to recent litigation that the department has been involved in. And it references to the price list in current law are deleted and replaced with language referencing practice at which the distributor, referencing the price at which the distributor purchases the tobacco product. And this is how the department is currently operating in this area. And sections 5 through 8 are involve the insurance tax and purchasing groups. And the purchasing groups will be treated like all entities that purchase insurance from non-admitted entities. And the tax will remain at 2%, but the returns will only have to be required, will only need to be filed once a year rather than twice a year, which is the current practice for these groups. So it's another streamlining change that we're trying to make.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go to questions. Representative Davids is first and Representative Liebling, but I first want to pause and ask if there's anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against House File 490. And there will be another opportunity. Again, unless people are holding out provisions, these will be in part of the omnibus tax bill so people can testify for or against concerns as we go forward. If there is no public testimony, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner Von Mosch. On page 17, Article 3, one of the special taxes on line 17.30, that is actually making it more beneficial, isn't it, to ethanol plants?
Assistant Commissioner. Assistant Commissioner, I just think Representative Davids is trying to get that special tax person up here somehow. I don't know who's in charge.
He's not that special.
I don't know.
I think I need the assistance of the special tax person. I'm not sure what, Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I'm not sure exactly what it does for the ethanol plants, but I do know it was a request to us from the Department of Agriculture.
Welcome.
Mr. Finnegan can maybe shed
please,
more light
Mr.
on that.
Please, Mr. Finnegan, welcome.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, this came to us at the end of last session, I believe, from the Agriculture Department and the Commerce Department, and they were made aware of these federal ASTM standards that were changed. And in our petroleum tax statute, we have a definition of E85, and they just wanted us to be in sync with the definitions that they're picking up. But to Representative David's question, it does expand, I suppose, a little bit what would qualify as an E85 blend of fuel.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 19, line 19.15, the wholesale price, is that something that's hopefully a bit non-controversial because there's some tobacco issues having to do with the weight and moist snuff and little cigars? This doesn't apply to any of that, does it? I'm just a little paranoid.
Oh.
Not that I'm paranoid. It just seems like everybody's after me.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Finnegan.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, this is the tax base for the tobacco products tax, and this language was actually passed out of the committee last year in the final tax bill, but the department's been involved with some litigation over the last couple of years, one Supreme Court case and one tax court case, and the Attorney General has approached us and basically proposed that we update our definition of wholesale sales price and do away with the price list and just go to a purchase price.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. And one final point to the Assistant Commissioner. Could you tell Commissioner Franz that you should not be an assistant anymore but rather deputy? It worked for Mossman.
So Representative Davids, that's so interesting you raised that because I was asking Ms. Kunisch to look up if your formal title was Assistant Commissioner or Deputy. And, you know, I have always puzzled on why are some people deputy and some people assistant. Do you have any idea? I've never understood that.
Madam Chair, Deputy Commissioner Massman has a lot more responsibility, I think.
Okay. Well,
that's
Representative Davids, I think we're going to have to see what we can do there. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Liebling, then Hansen. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm looking at page 3, line 3.25. We're changing the way this is stated. I'm not sure what this relates to exactly, but here's my concern about it.
Madam Chair, Representative, could you tell me what line you're looking at again?
Yeah, 3.25.
Okay.
Here you're taking you're defining a person to mean a bunch of stuff that aren't really people. And I realize that this probably in its context is probably harmless, but a lot of us are kind of concerned about the fact that the Supreme Court has just said that, well, not just, but has now said that a corporation is a person, and we'd like to reverse that. And I realize that's not exactly in the context that you're using it here, but I just wanted to flag that and say, is there a way to state this differently so that we're not making these entities into persons? And I did note that in another place in the bill, on page 19, you're using the term person differently. You're saying the tax is imposed on persons, a person, firm, corporation, or purchasing group. So you're not doing that consistently, and just my own preference would be that you not do that because there's a little political sensitivity around it.
Ms. Von Mosch.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm going to refer to Mr. Strica to explain the language on 3.25, and then I will say that we will go back and look at this within the department too.
Mr. Strica, please.
Welcome. Madam Chair, Representative, first of all, this definition of person is related and limited to the property tax. The section being changed on lines 324, 326 is for property tax. I suppose I should say I wish there was one definition of person that applied to all the different taxes, but there's 50 different taxes that came in at different times. Some of them are 100 years old. Some of them are 10 years old. We can work on that. This definition has to do with property taxes. The reason we did this is because back on page 6, when we're talking about these agricultural purposes above 10 acres, below 10 acres, we had farming entity, person, and some other phrase. And so we can, that's what's going on here. That we can certainly go back and look at a different way to do it.
Yeah. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I don't want to be persnickety about this, but I just think that it would be better if you could include an individual, you could include a real person under a different term with all these other entities just as easily. And if I appreciate your response. Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And again, members, we do want to work on any provisions anybody in the committee has a concern with it, because this is really sort of the non-controversial stuff. So if it's controversial to you, then it's controversial. So you'll just want to highlight it. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had an earlier question, but then Representative David's question prompted another question. And that's
okay.
On page 17 on the E85. So current law says that E85 typically contains 85% by volume, and now we would be changing it to say not more than 85% by volume. And then it says current law is at a minimum must contain 60% by volume, and we're changing that to greater than 50. So is E85 now E51 in terms of it? I mean, that's quite a wide strike range to go from 51 to 85, but not over 85. And then we say in statute what the energy content will be, regardless of what the ethanol content is. And I don't know if the science could back that up. If the ethanol content changes, the energy content probably is variable too. So I actually think this is pretty substantive in terms of redefinition for tax purposes, because it appears to me this is a dilution, but still selling it for at a BTU rate. And I'm not sure if we want to do that. So I think we should pull that.
Sounds like this one's becoming controversial on both sides here. But Mr. Finnegan, further?
Madam Chair, I'm not really clear that there is much fuel between the 50% and 60% ethanol range that's on the market. This was just a proposal that apparently the Agriculture Department and the Commerce Department, both in their fuel statutes, picked up this new federal definition, and we try to make the same changes in ours. But I can't say for sure that that there's a lot of that type of fuel on the market.
So is it kind of are you saying it's kind of a conformity provision for the department?
Definitely, we're conforming with the definitions of other departments and of the federal standards. Either. Basically, we're picking up this this federal standard D5798-11 on line 18.2, and that's the definition that drops the ethanol requirement to greater than 50.
Ms. Von Mosch.
Madam Chair, I think what might be appropriate here is that we go back to the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Commerce and actually have them provide some background material on this. We're not necessarily the experts in this. We're carrying this because they requested us to, and we can get some more information for them, for you and the members to look at, and we can talk to the staff in those agencies and see what they have to add to the discussion.
Okay. So, and I think, if they can be told that both Representative Hansen and Representative Davids are asking questions about this provision so they could give us some context. Maybe that will help. Representative Anzels, are you still on this provision or a new one?
Yes.
This one. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, when you contact the agencies for some clarity here, it would be good, seems to me, for the committee to know who proposed this, who wants this, who benefits from this. Mm-hmm. Is it the producer? Is it the plant? Is it the consumer? I get a real sense that it's not very consumer friendly. Or is it just simply the department's administration of their various roles in the ethanol program? So if you could give us that kind of clarity, I think that would help me.
Madam Chair, yes.
Please, yes. Okay, that sounds good. I think we all just don't know the answer, right? So we'll find out. And if it's just, I will say again, Assistant Commissioner, if it's just too controversial for this committee, it's probably not going to proceed in the omnibus tax bill, because we really try to keep these bills to be the items that people are in agreement on. There's very little to agree on often, so this is usually one area that we find agreement on. So other questions on any other provisions? Yes, Representative Hansen, please.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. Back to my original question I was going to ask.
Before. I'm sorry. Yes.
And I would go on page 6. And the provisions between 615 and 616, 617. And I know we're trying to be inclusive. I'm looking at existing law. And just with existing law, we tend to cite federal bills that change. And we have specific programs, and sometimes when we list a specific program and there are other specific programs, even though we say other similar programs, they may not be similar or they may be different, but they're still conservation programs. So I'm just wondering if there's, so we don't have to keep modifying every time there's a change in farm programs, if we can find a better way of just citing these conservation programs rather than specifically naming them. It's not anything that the department's proposing here, but okay. It might be something to work on, just as this farm bills come and go, and often they rename programs, and if we cite one and it changes, then we've got to go back and be specific on, and I see we're citing a public law here for the federal government, so it might be better to have something a little broader that we don't have to keep tweaking every time there's a change.
Thank you. Anything else?
Madam Chair, we can work on that and work with Representative Hansen to develop some language.
Okay, that'd be great. Any other public testimony? Any other questions? If not, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I should say, Representative Groff, I do want to mention something. Okay, there is a provision in the bill we just were on. I forgot about it again. That is a data practices provision. And the rules, the folks here understand the rules better than I do, know that those have to go to civil law. And so what I did, and if there is a problem with this, I introduced that provision, those provisions, as a separate bill, so it could get sent right to Representative Lesch so he could hear it. If, you know, I'm not aware of a deadline as it relates to this bill, but if there is, we may have to take this back up again and lay it over again. So just to, you know, we just want to make sure the data practices provisions get to the right committee. Representative Anderson, were you on that? No. Because Representative Garofalo is waiting, but were you on data practices?
Nope.
No, okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
Well, sort of
yes.
To that. Right?
Okay.
I know I just saw an email Representative Lesch sent the other day, and I think we talked about it on the House floor, actually, that
okay.
There's a I don't know if you had if you met the deadline to get your bill in. So.
Representative Lesch, maybe you want to jump in. That there, you know, there is a deadline for, there's not a deadline for tax bills, but we can certainly send this right now to Representative Lesch. Would the committee prefer that? Would you prefer that, Representative Lesch?
Well, Madam Chair.
I didn't know you were in the room, so I apologize.
That's all right. Like a mouse over here. And speaking with members of the committee, and it's been the past practice of the Data Practices Committee as well as in civil law to have an omnibus bill. Otherwise, sending these things piecemeal to the floor is really problematic. So, yes, we had set tomorrow as the deadline for it. I don't know when you introduced it. I didn't see it. But just let me see it. Hopefully, we can get it in there.
Well, Representative Lilly, would you want to, was it your motion? Would you want to amend your motion to send this bill to Representative Lesch now, and we can do that, and then they can take the provisions out that they need and send the rest back? Does that work? For people, I mean, I want to do what works for everybody. Representative Davids, do you have a thought on that?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. Others? Representative Loeffler?
Thank you. And not knowing what part you sent over, I would also include the email addresses that we're providing that people can provide just to make sure that they're adequately protected as well.
I guess I will say, since I don't really know either, the safest thing is probably to give the whole bill to Representative Lesch's committee, I think. Is everybody okay with that? So Representative Lilly amends his motion to send House File 490 to civil law. Is that okay, Representative Lesch?
It's okay, Madam Chair.
Okay. Anything else? Not all those in
Madam Chair.
489, sorry.
Well, actually, there one provision is in one bill and one provision is in another bill. So that
okay.
Would mean both bills would need
so
to
So we've got the 490 motion on the floor from Representative Lilly. So let's vote on that. And I guess we'll just send them both. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so that one's on passed and on its way to civil law, and now we need the motion. I can't remember who made that one. Representative Hansen's gone. Would somebody like to reconsider the motion to lay this over for possible consideration, take it off the table, and send it back to Representative Lesch?
So moved.
So Representative Dabney makes that motion to take 489 off the table and re-refer it instead to civil law. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. Motion carries. So both of these bills are now in the hands of Representative Lesch, and thank you all for working that out with me, and we'll get the tax stuff back before the end of the day, so thank you.
Okay.
Anything else? If not, thank
Madam,
you all.
Madam.
Yes, oh, I'm so sorry, Representative Garofalo, yes, please.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I assume you're done with the official business, right?
Yes.
So I just want to, you know, the DFL staff, I know that I am their favorite, because a couple of times this year, they have left me off the attendance list of members who are present, but today they've double-checked to make sure I'm reading, and in the minutes they've put me as both being present and excused at the same time. And so I just want to thank the DFL staff for that. And if, I don't know if you've moved the minutes, Madam Chair, but if you could, someone could move the minutes to with that one change leaving.
That is duly noted. We're not going to move the minutes because Ms. Kunish told me that there was a change she's taught to make in the minutes, so hopefully that was it. So we're going to bring the minutes back again next time, but thank you for bringing that up, Representative Garofalo. Representative Benson.
Madam Chair, just a point of information, on which list then would Garofalo be placed?
and is being on both wrong. Yeah.
Which list are you? No, okay, we're kidding. All right, thank you very much. We're adjourned.